Hello and welcome to Contemplations. We are covering part four of the cults. This is going to be the psychology of cults, and we're going to be talking about some so-called cult experts and how they're all hacks and I hate them, as well as introducing some actual psychological concepts and speculating ourselves, because I think we've got more qualification than the so-called experts to do so, and I'll be explaining that first before we get into it. But we'll be making reference to lots of different cults here, and seeing as it's been quite well received, I'm sure I'll return to look at some other cults in the future, but I just didn't want to oversaturate you with cults. I think a bit of a change of pace for a while, as well as giving Bo and Stelios a bit of a break from featuring on Contemplations, would probably be good. So, of course, I've unintentionally introduced you both already. Of course, we have Stelios, who is our philosopher, and of course, the boa constrictor, BB Dade.
That's a new one to me.
Yeah, that was one I had in the back pocket. I spent a lot of time trying to come up with some, who is, of course, our historian. So, first and foremost, it's worth mentioning that cult psychology is basically a sort of non-existent scientific field, if you're kind of going capital S scientific, in that there's no actual science being done in it, really, in that there's no empiricism. It's just people kind of speculating and being like, I'm an authority figure, therefore what I say holds weight, which I find reprehensible, because that kind of psychology is really irresponsible. This is kind of why I have a bone to pick with psychoanalysis, is that it's just one person's speculation. And we were actually riffing about this before, making fun of Freud being somewhat, his theories reveal more about him than they do about human psychology. And I think that that's also true of the cult experts. So I think these people are very self-aggrandizing. They're hacks, more or less. And they position themselves as experts in society, and society viewed them as such because, of course, you don't doubt that if someone says, okay, I'm an expert at this field, I'm at the University of Washington or Harvard or something like that, then you would presume, well, they're a professor, they know what they're talking about. Well, no, is the answer to that. They tried to ride the wave of public interest in the 70s and 80s to become these public figures, seemingly for entirely self-serving reasons, because the quality of their understanding is really, really poor. In fact, it's probably one of the most egregious areas of psychology I've ever seen, which is saying something, because I've looked at intersectional psychology, I've looked at all like feminist psychology, I've looked at all of this other stuff, and at least they're kind of getting at something. They're trying to understand something that may well exist, whereas the cult psychologists are just inventing concepts. And it pains me to admit that, you know, there's anything to any of that other stuff. So you must know by now that I really despise these people. So I would say that their understanding is probably no better than a layperson. In some cases, it's actively harmful, and therefore it's worse. I feel like people's intuitions would actually be more healthy for an understanding than their understanding. Because, for example, they often fail to distinguish between certain cognitive processes becoming harmful in a cult setting and how they function normally outside of that setting. Because, of course, you don't just have a little compartment in your brain where all of the cult things are, and then all of the cult things manifest if you're in the cult scenario. No, these brain processes, they serve other purposes that are involved. And so you've got to be able to distinguish between, when are these brain processes functioning normally? When are they unhelpful, abnormal in a cult setting? That's one of the key questions as a psychologist you've got to be able to answer. Of course, it wasn't even addressed, not once. And that is absurd to me, that such a fundamental question, such as what's abnormal, what is normal, in terms of cognitive processes, it never comes up. And there's no discussion from these experts of, okay, this is the kind of thing you need to see in the world for it to start becoming abnormal. No, it's just, these are the concepts, these are always bad under every circumstance. And it's just like, oh right, so these are just socially constructed things. But we'll get onto that in a second.
It's a bit of frontier psychiatry.
It is, yeah. That's a good way of putting it, really, because they certainly were sort of innovators in a sense, if they're actually innovating at all. They certainly helped introduce the field into public consciousness. But I think because of the damage they've done, no credible sort of empirical psychologist wants to go in it, because then you're forever going to be tarred as like a quack who's just making stuff up. Although you could research cults with proper scientific methods quite easily, actually. Like, you could compare their abilities in certain areas, say their critical thinking skills compared with people who aren't cult members, or perhaps even other religious groups. That there are lots of ways you can operationalize and measure what might be going on there, and that simply hasn't happened. It not at all. I wasn't able to find pretty much any research that does this, which really surprised me, because I would have thought that the world is ripe for it. But I suppose there's a couple of barriers in the way: the willingness of cult members to participate, and the ethical problems around it, because of course ethical clearance in psychology these days is actually very difficult if you're doing something of that nature. And so one would imagine that designing an experiment that would work, that would also get ethical clearance, would be quite difficult. And so that might be part of the barrier to it. But then also, there will be exceptions, provided if you could emphasize the fact that, okay, these are vulnerable people, they need to be understood, and therefore the ethical risk is worth the reward if you can prove that there's some sort of clinical advantage to carrying out these studies. So it seems like it is possible, at least in my mind, from my understanding.
One problem I have with psychiatry in the broadest sense, I don't think I'd say it's of no value or anything like that, but one of the red flags is when it comes to when psychiatrists have to decide if someone's clinically insane, fully clinically insane, they're not fit to stand trial, they just need to spend the rest of their life in a secure hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And they largely, quite often, just don't agree.
Yeah, someone
someone will be looked at by like six different psychiatrists, and they all disagree on whether that person it should be responsible for their own actions or not. So it's not scientific, as you say.
Mm.
It's just sort of people's opinions, and not that that has no value, but you know, let's just be honest about it. It's not a science.
No, I dislike how elitist it is. I find that if there is a form of therapy that I would, you know, wholeheartedly recommend, it'd be the ones that are collaborative between the therapist and the patient. Each one works together to try and solve the problem, rather than I'm going to sit in this chair and tell you how your mind works. It's like, I'm sorry, but in most cases, the person who understands their mind best is the person who inhabits it. I know that seems fairly obvious and uncontroversial, but yeah, if you approach clinical psychology in particular, although that's not necessarily what we're going to be talking about today, with that state of mind that you're trying to help the person, therefore you're going to point things out that you think might be possible and test it against their own intuitions and their own understanding, then that's going to be more healthy, because I have a view of therapy and psychoanalysis and all that sort of stuff whereby they're just putting them on the right path for them to improve themselves. That's the desirous end goal. If people can be put in the right direction whereby their own actions can improve their life, rather than them being entirely dependent on a professional, then they're set up to improve themselves and improve their situation far more than they would in an hour session once a week for, you know, 6 months, say. So that seems the best to my mind. But the experts that we're going to be talking about today, one of my other gripes is that they seem to emphasize that cult psychology is kind of its own unique and distinct thing, separate from normal human psychology. And this doesn't really address one of the themes that we've identified previously, where there's similarities in some cults between religious beliefs, some not so. So how can there be this variability if it's so distinct? Because, of course, the Osho one, some of the structures of the social organization were a bit culty, but it wasn't a religion, really. There were religious elements to it, sure, but formally speaking, it was more of a philosophy, because it was inherently denying the metaphysical. They used the language of, say, transcendence and sort of cognitive expansion, maybe. They wouldn't use that term, but that's basically what they were getting at. But what they meant was more psychological than anything else, I think. So it's difficult to pin down, but there is a lot of variability. And I think that we're going to get onto the definition of what a cult actually is finally at the end. Once we've been through everything and we've kind of dissected the psychology of it, it's much easier to pin it down. And I feel like I've got a relatively concrete definition that allows you to navigate the differences between these organizations and make distinctions between religions and things like that. So the final thing in the kind of nail in the coffin for cult experts for me is that they believe in these pseudoscientific concepts, like there's the possibility for people to be brainwashed, which it doesn't exist. There's no evidence for that. It's basically, I'm not sure if you might be able to give us a bit of detail here, Bo, but in the Korean War, there was some sort of media story where American soldiers had been brainwashed by the Chinese to say that America was bad and China is good, rather than them just defecting.
Mm.
And I mean, yeah, it is possible for people to be a traitor. Explaining that away by saying the Chinese had developed this kind of understanding of human psychology where they can insert entire worldviews into a person's head and make them parrot them.
Mm.
No, that's not how it works. In fact, brainwashing, as we know it, doesn't exist, like in the sort of sci-fi sense. The main thing that can happen is that people can have their minds changed, but you can't forcibly insert ideas in someone's head unless they're receptive to them. That's,
or just terrify someone.
Yeah.
Because fear is the mind killer, isn't it? Frank Herbert tells us. That if you just intimidate and terrify someone into just doing your bidding, and then later explain it as though they've been brainwashed. Well, they haven't been brainwashed. What is brainwashing? Well, that's not really a thing. One thing, though, I would say is, I don't know if this is possible either. It's sort of an out there idea, but you can certainly break someone's mind. There's different ways of doing that. Well, for example, you
can give them
like
a nervous breakdown or something like that, whereby they're clearly deeply psychologically damaged.
Yeah, I don't know if you ever heard, I think it's called white torture. I think places like Iran might have done it, and America, I'm not sure. But anyway, there's such a thing as white torture, where they put you in a room with no windows, with a very bright white light in there, and everything in there is white. Every surface is white. It's just a cell with a bed, and all the food they give you is just white. You're never let out. You're in solitary confinement in this place.
Hamza Yusuf's hell, yeah.
And the lights are on 24/7, and you're kept in there in solitary for days, weeks, months, whatever. And apparently that does fairly quickly sort of kind of melt your mind.
It can drive you a bit mad, but it also doesn't...
More than a bit mad. Mm-hmm.
Doesn't insert any ideas in your
mind. Right, well, that's what I was going to say. So there's something like that, where it might be like, you might be able to argue that it's something like the first step in some sort of fictional concept of brainwashing, that you first wipe the slate clean. So something like that, I think, does exist. I think there's other ways that you can do that. You can sort of almost sort of wipe someone's mind, where they're like a gibbering wreck in some way,
like,
or you go clinically mad.
Mm-hmm.
But then the idea of inserting then a whole new ideology and everything, I don't think that's ever been done. I don't think that exists.
No, it has never been done. Right. But it's also not fair to say you're wiping their mind. Like if you remove
like a hard
them,
drive,
if you remove them from that environment, eventually they're going to return to normal.
Maybe.
Unless it's been too traumatic and then, you know, it's changed them, they get like a form of PTSD.
Yeah, I think
you can like put them in like a soundproof black dark box, like in solitary confinement, but worse. And that can drive people a bit mad because the lack of sensory information makes the brain start generating stuff. They almost start getting symptoms of schizophrenia, like you can hear voices and see shapes and colours that aren't there and things like that. But then it is entirely possible to take that person out of that environment and return to normal, depending on the person and depending on how traumatic the circumstances are. Because there's also, you know, if you willingly enter that thing, like a sensory deprivation tank, people do that for meditation purposes. Yeah. Like it doesn't have to be torture.
But that's obviously short.
Yeah.
The idea of white torture is it's for maybe weeks or months or something, or mm-hmm. even longer, who knows?
Yeah.
There's other examples, aren't there? Like the classic Chinese water torture where you're strapped to a bed and one drop of water drops on the middle of your forehead at a regular rate. But again, for days or weeks or months or something, it can sort of, yeah, send you completely mad. But again, that's just nothing close to this sort of classic idea, almost maybe a comic book concept of brainwashing. Are we going to get rid of everything you think and everything you are and insert a new version?
I think that there are other ways to view brainwashing because, for instance, there are people who are vulnerable. And especially when they are in states of vulnerability, they're really susceptible to suggestion. And
that's certainly true, isn't it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't see why the concept of brainwashing is a bad concept. Maybe one understanding.
Well, it doesn't exist, is why it's a bad concept. As in, there's no provable, there's no evidence for it whatsoever. In fact, there's evidence to the contrary.
It seems to me you're talking about a particular conception of brainwashing, right, yeah, like I the think so, comic yeah. one, but the idea that there are vulnerable people who are prone to suggestion seems mm-hmm. to me to be all-pervading in but what I think we're that discussing in
that's
about cults.
Kind of muddying the water because suggestibility is a different concept entirely than the concept of brainwashing because, you know, these are specific psychological terms that have been kind of coined that have specific definitions. And we will be talking about susceptibility. And I agree with your point that there are people who you could suggest something and just by their disposition, they're like, oh yeah, that maybe you're right, that sort of thing, whereby they will personally take it on internally, normally like a high agreeableness in the big five personality inventory is a good indicator of whether they're going to take that on board. And I think we're going to give a proper breakdown, but I think that that's
do one you want of the, to leave that for later?
I think so, yeah, okay, because I'm talking about the hacks first. We can't talk about any proper ideas like that one.
I was just going to say super quickly, and I will talk about it later, but mm-hmm. aren't we all susceptible to some degree?
Of course, yeah.
Nobody's
unsusceptible.
Right,
yeah.
Well, okay. it's just a question of degrees then.
Mm-hmm. Right. If you weren't susceptible to being convinced, then you would never change your mind. Which, you know, would be a far worse problem to have than being, you know, easily convinced, I think. Just being completely pig-headed in your opinions. It's also worth mentioning as well, they believe that mind control is possible, which, yeah, that's sci-fi nonsense. Also that hypnosis can help in some way, like deprogram them. That's the term they use, by the way. They say, oh, we deprogram the cult members, which sounds culty in and of itself, which that's basically true. Is like their own way of manipulating their psychology as they see fit, quite often forcibly against the individual's will. So yeah, it's like some sort of intellectual struggle session, I think is the politest way of putting it. But these concepts don't have any evidentiary basis in psychology. This was known at the time as well, so they can't be forgiven in the 70s and 80s. They knew that they were the ones creating these concepts, but they did it anyway. And I think that they've had an entirely destructive influence on public consciousness and knowledge about cults, like the whole notion, you've been brainwashed and you're in a cult. Like that's a relatively commonly used phrase when talking about this sort of thing. And that, to me, seems like a kind of an appalling abuse of your authority and your position in a university. And so these people have also positioned themselves in legal cases. They have testified as experts, basically trying to determine whether someone is guilty, innocent, whether they're lying about their condition or, you know, they're a psychopath that can't be released. These things are very questionable because these people should not be recognized as experts. I don't even think they should be allowed to speak their opinions publicly at this point. They should be locked up. They don't seem to have any understanding of the phenomenon, which sounds very strong, but when you see what I'm going to be looking at soon enough, you'll understand why I think that. So they have also sought to help those who have left cults. Obviously, they don't have any evidence for their methods, but these sort of deprogramming programs that they have, they're kind of counter indoctrinating, I suppose, is the fairer term. They're just trying to bring them back away from their own beliefs towards beliefs that are closer to their own, as in they themselves, the individual who's trying to deprogram them. But then that's fraught with its own questions as well, because of course, if you're a health professional with status and authority, and you're basically inserting your worldview in another person who's probably questioning their own worldview to a certain extent, how can that be ethical? You are just trying to implant your own understanding of the world around you and your and what a person's place in it is. You're not trying to help them necessarily. You're not working together to fix the problems that the cult member has identified. You're imposing your own understanding and will on the person. There's a sort of hierarchical element to it that I find disgusting, that you're using your position of authority not to help a person necessarily, but to put ideas in their head that you think are right. And, you know, when someone's vulnerable, as Stelios was saying, that someone might be quite suggestible, well, what huge amount of damage that can do. Like, you're just saying, okay, you should believe this. You're also setting them up as well to be more easily convinced by future people, because you're an authority figure that is saying, you need to believe this, this, and this. And surely if that dynamic somehow helps them somewhat, then they're going to go away from it thinking, well, I need to listen to people who tell me what to think from now on. And that's like the worst possible thing that you could do to a cult member, because of course they've got a proven track record of being susceptible to that sort of thing. What do you both think?
I don't know exactly the method that is used.
They're pretty vague about it themselves, but
okay.
It varies between individual to individual, yes. Because they're more in that sort of psychotherapist yeah. realm, and so they don't have these formalized practices necessarily. They kind of have free rein to a certain extent. Obviously, there are some limitations.
Okay, let me say one thing about how I would proceed in particular cases, and tell me if you think that this is really bad. So. Mm-hmm. Maybe what I'm saying is not the method used. Maybe you're...
There isn't necessarily a formal method, but I have propositions based on pre-existing ones.
For me, it's all about the attitude and the way in which you approach people. I cannot see how we can relate without saying to each other what we think is right and what we think is true. So I think that this... Just trying to, in a way, you could say that all kinds of conversation try to get the other person to see the world in the way you see it.
Mm-hmm.
So if that is manipulation, then all kinds of conversation are manipulation.
But there's certainly a hierarchy of that, isn't there? In that you could say, well, you can ask someone the question like, oh, what do you think about this?
Yes.
And you ask, lead them on to elaborate their own thinking with questions, like probing questions.
Yes.
You get them to articulate it. And then on the other side of that, you could be like, well, the world works like this, this, and this. You need to do this.
Okay. So I see this, and I think that it has to do with, again, the attitude and whether you approach people with a fallibilistic attitude, because none of us can make infallible self-ascriptions. We're all prone to make mistakes, whether we're talking about ourselves or about other people. So it seems to me that it is good if we try to talk to other people and try to make them see the world the way we see it, but also tell them that we could be mistaken. It seems to me that this is absent in lots of cults, because there is supposed to be a kind of blind obedience to the authority of someone. And if a person, let's say if a friend of mine was involved in what I think is cult or cult thinking, I would tell them.
Well, and I think that's in that case,
in that case, this could be seen as forceful, but I would tell them, I think that what you're doing is problematic. I think that it is dangerous.
Mm-hmm. But the difference there is you're not using your power as, you know, an authority figure to say, okay, I'm deprogramming you. You need to go through with this. Sometimes they would, you know, get this through legal means. They would use the backing of, say, the justice system or something like that to forcibly deprogram someone rather than you giving a friend who, you know, the power dynamic is, you know, your peers, aren't you?
Yes.
And so you're not using your authority to tell them how the world is. You're speaking from a point of concern. They can kind of take your advice or leave it, if you will.
I can definitely see, though, how that could be, how that could take place in a concrete context in which if that person could stop thanking me as a friend, mm-hmm. for instance. And then I could be, I would tell them, listen, you're an ideologue, okay? You're a cultish member. I would speak with in a more authoritative manner. I don't think, because I would not want to necessarily force the other person to see the things the way I see them, but I would want to wake them up. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, and I think that in some cases, you need to get some people to wake up at what they're doing. If you see someone heading towards a crevice and they're going to harm themselves, I think that if you care about them, you have to tell them somehow. And they may not want to listen. So how do you get them to listen there?
Well, you can never make someone listen. And if they're so resistant as to ignore healthy advice and things like that, then you've almost done and exhausted what you can. Because at the end of the day, you can't forcefully change someone's mind, can you, really? They've got to be willing to do it, which is one of the problems with brainwashing in the first place, is that for someone to have their mind changed, they've got to be open to the idea. Mm-hmm. If you're completely set on an idea being true, no amount of evidence or argument or anything is going to change your mind by definition. And so you can only do so much. And I think that when it's getting to the point where someone is unable to see an outside perspective on their situation, then you start getting into sort of mental health areas whereby they're so lost inside their own head that even an outside perspective completely, you know, brushes off their back. It's, you know, they're basically indifferent to it. And that point seems to be one of the points whereby it's very difficult to help someone. They've kind of got to be willing to help themselves. And this is one of the things we see play out in lots of cults, is that someone joins a cult, people try and convince them out of it. They're not convinced. And then they go into the cult, have some bad experiences. And then eventually they start changing their mind. Well, maybe this is bad. And then someone challenges their beliefs and like, oh, right, okay. Yeah, maybe it was wrong. And then they can leave. That's the sort of blueprint I've seen for people who have just come out of cults somewhat naturally, if you will, not necessarily with the intervention of these experts, although I don't doubt that there may well have been some element of that going on. But still, I think the important thing is that the key thing is the individual's mind. That's it. It's not, you can't externally force ideas on someone. What do you reckon, Bo?
Yeah, in my experience, in real life, to convince someone to change their own mind is extremely difficult. And also in my experience is the only time I've ever been successful with it is with an extremely light touch over a long period of time. Mm-hmm. Just suggest things to people, and if they really kick back on it at all, just let it go. Say, okay, fine. No worries. And then maybe leave it a long time before bringing it up again. Maybe wait for a choice moment when you think maybe they're starting to have doubts. And again, very, very softly, softly suggest again that perhaps perhaps they're wrong and what you're suggesting is right. That's the only real way I've had any real success at changing someone's mind. If you're arguing with someone and you're butting heads in a conversation, they're not changing their mind. They're going to be doubling down, if anything, usually, nearly always. Not always, but you know, nearly always. So if someone's absolutely convinced, sort of dogmatically convinced about something, about the truth of the cult that they're following, for example, in my experience, it's impossible to sort of sit them down and just convince them, you know, in a sort of a hardball way that they're wrong, that they're wrong-headed. So yeah, and so it's just a sort of a delicate process, I think. And yeah, you have to convince them really that they've come to the conclusion that they were wrong all along. That's the only real way. And you know what it's like. I mean, some very enlightened people, not very enlightened, but some people, you can convince them, you can argue them into, paint them into a corner, and they'll say, you know, in real time, they'll say, you know what, I was wrong. You must be right. Some people do that. I've done that once or twice. When someone's absolutely dominated me in an argument, and I've been like, okay, I've got nowhere left to go. You must be right. But it's hard to do, to sort of swallow your pride like that.
I did it yesterday.
Most people don't do that. They'll go to absurd lengths in order to not do that quite often, most people. But there you go. Yeah, if you can. So when someone sort of, like I say, maybe it's got to the point of being a dogma in their mind, it's very difficult, and especially if you sort of lock them up, you put them in a, like I say, a mental hospital. You have a panel of psychiatrists grilling them, telling them what to think now. It's probably the worst thing you could, it's not a great idea, I don't think, but I mean, what can you do? If people are, because there's different cults, aren't there? Like the Osho people are pretty innocent people, really, aren't they? They're not a danger.
Well, maybe not then, that Sheila lady who tried to poison the salad bar and murder people.
Yeah, she's, but you know, the normal rank and file 2023 Osho member, I'm sure is not a worry. But then you've got, you know, people that follow, you know, Charles Manson or something, like real killers. Keep them in a prison or a secure hospital until they're, or maybe forever, but you know, until they've changed their mind.
With the Manson family, though, you could just lock them up and basically leave them. You don't have to challenge their ideas because time, you know, in jail is good introspection time. And so you would think that, oh yeah, the reason I'm here is because some random bloke told me to kill some celebrities. You know, you've already set yourself up for a realization there.
It's not even just sort of Manson family members. What about Islamists, where their ideology is that infidels really deserve death, or apostates should be killed, gay people should be killed, and views about women being of less value than as humans and things. It would be difficult to change their mind just to bombard them with liberal ideas, liberal in the old sense, not that sort of the Obama sense, just to bombard them with sort of fair-mindedness, the concept of fair play. Like, it's not going to work, right? It's not really going to work. Well,
thank you for watching that clip from my series Contemplations. If you want to sign up to the website for £5 a month, you can access that series, which comes out 1 p.m. every Saturday. Thank you for watching, and goodbye.